We are joined on the line now by Professor Francis Boyle, who is a law professor at the University of Illinois, and we are here to talk about Judge Barrett and her confirmation hearing that's going on right now in the Senate. And I wonder if you could just start by talking about her concept of originalism about the U.S. Constitution. What does that mean, and what does Amy Barrett believe about it?
Well, as I pointed out, we pointed out in a press release yesterday, this whole idea of originalism is pure bunkum. It goes back to a speech that Bob Bork gave at the University of Indiana Law School around 1971, and we have to consider the source. Remember, Bork was the one who, at the behest of Tricky Dick Nixon, fired Archie Cox as the Watergate independent counsel. So let's get that out there right away. And if you read the speech, he says, yeah, these are just my preliminary exploratory thoughts. And then even what he goes through there, just to give you an idea of what this is about, he attacks, not only does he attack Brown versus the Board of Education, which I'm sure all your readers, listeners are aware of, abolishing separate but equal for African Americans. And that's a standard Federalist Society position. Barrett is a member, Scalia was a member. And he not only did he do that, Bork attacked Shelley v. Kramer, which was a pre-Brown decision by the U.S. Supreme Court around 1947, saying it was wrongly decided. Well, what did Shelley v. Kramer do? Well, the U.S. Supreme Court struck down covenants for property that prohibited blacks from living in that neighborhood. Now, think about that. Bork attacked that. This, too, is standard Federalist Society propaganda. They are also against Shelley v. Kramer. So that just gives you a general idea of what people like Barrett and Scalia and Bork are all about. Now, what happened then is that Reagan was elected president. You're out there in the West Coast, you know all about Reagan. And he appointed Ed Meese as his White House counsel for 4 years and then attorney general for 4 years. And in that position, Meese selected everyone who either worked at the Department of Justice or was nominated for a federal judgeship, that they had to sign on to this completely bogus doctrine of originalism developed by Bob Bork. So that's where Scalia came from. He worked for the Department of Justice. Before that, he had been a faculty member at the University of Chicago Law School, where I went as an undergrad. And that law school, completely right-wing reactionary dinosaurs there, which is why I didn't want to go there to law school. I went to Harvard Law School, which, back in those days, comparatively was progressive. And he was the faculty advisor there, Scalia, to the Federalist Society. Bork was faculty advisor there at Yale Law School to the Federalist Society. After he fired Archie Cox, he went back to Yale Law School. And so Meese required everyone for all 8 years of the Reagan administration who wanted to work for the Department of Justice or to serve in a federal judgeship, which is how Scalia got it, and how Bork got it, to adhere to this completely bogus doctrine of originalism. And that then was for 8 years of Reagan. It was 4 years of Bush Senior, 8 years of Bush Junior, and now 4 years of Trump. Everyone has to pass this litmus test, indeed Trump's all of Trump's federal judicial nominations, there have been 200 of them now, are vetted by the Federalist Society. They get approved by the Federalist Society, they get sent over to the White House, and then Trump just puts them up, and most of them have gotten through. The head of the Federalist Society until recently, the longstanding head, Leonard Leo, he was also, is still a member of Opus Dei. And I'm sure some of you are aware of Opus Dei. It's a fascist Catholic cult. I'm not here disparaging Catholics. One of the best Supreme Court justices we ever had in my lifetime was Bill Brennan on the Warren Court appointed by President Eisenhower. But Opus Dei are just Catholic fascists that go back to the spiritual advisor for Francisco Franco, who was an ally of Hitler and Mussolini. And Opus Dei sent a contingent of people to fight with Nazi Germany against the Soviet Union. It does not appear that Barrett is a member of Opus Dei. She's a member of another religious group there. It seems to be patterned on Opus Dei, but, you know, I don't think they're outright fascists like Opus Dei. So that, I'm afraid, Krista, is what we're dealing with here. The Federalist Society, their agenda, they're right-wing, racist, bigoted, reactionary, sexist. The Federalist Society was against the Violence Against Women's Act, which the Supreme Court struck down. They're totalitarian, they're anti-labor, pro-corporate, you know, the list of these things goes on. So that Barrett has been vetted and approved and certified first for appointment to the Seventh Circuit up here in Chicago. I'm licensed up there, but I haven't appeared before her. And then now for the Supreme Court. One other point. She taught at Notre Dame Law School. Well, years ago, I interviewed there for a job. And as an assistant professor of law, I was told by the dean of the law school that if I went there to teach, I would have to take a formal pledge to conduct myself in accordance with Catholic values. Well, that interview didn't work out. Back in those days, Notre Dame was about 35. I came here, we were about 15, so fine, that was no problem at all. So, you know, we're dealing here with a highly ideological and ideological-motivated person.
Well, and can you just describe the danger of originalism as a concept? As I understand it, it allows the judiciary to put more power in the executive branch as opposed to the U.S. Congress?
Sure. All the Feddies, I call them Feddies, they all believe in this unitary power theory of the presidency. And that goes back to Thomas Hobbes, the Leviathan, which I teach to my law students in jurisprudence, which is basically the Leviathan, a blueprint for a totalitarian state, right? And Hobbes articulated in there this unitary power theory that basically the president has powers to do whatever he wants. That's what Trump has said, right? He said that I'm president. Under Article 2, I can do what I want. That's standard Federalist Society propaganda, right? And by the way, Trump has said, he wants to put Barrett on the Supreme Court to decide the upcoming election cases in his favor. In other words, he's putting Barrett on there to steal the November election for him. And this happened before in Bush v. Gore, a 5-4 decision where five Republican justices who had been vetted by the Federalist Society stopped the vote in Florida and gave the election to Bush Jr. So he's aware of that precedent, and that's what's going to happen here. He's already, you know, he's making claims that you know, the whole election is rigged and this, that, and the other thing. So there will be lawsuits going up there to the Supreme Court, more than one, I'm sure. And they're going to be deciding them in his favor. And he's already said he's putting Barrett on for that reason. And we have to take him at his word.
Well, and I just want to ask you something as a professor of law about the process of this nomination. I know that when there was Neil Gorsuch was nominated, there was a lot of controversy about the use of the nuclear option, which eliminated the filibuster and allowed them to have just a majority vote on that. It didn't seem like that was brought up again, and it's kind of assumed that that's going to be the case in Amy Barrett's confirmation hearing?
Yeah, that was eliminated permanently, so it's not there anymore, and it's not there for any of the federal judgeships. That's why there's literally been a conveyor belt from the Federalist Society under Leonard Leo, the member of this fascist Catholic organization, Opus Dei, to the White House. Then Trump just sends them up to the Senate, and Mitch McConnell approves them. There's now been 200 of them. And O'Connell, as you know, has bragged about this, saying it's the most important thing I've done up here is to ram these judicial nominations through. Yeah. So no veto, no.
And this is the same.
No filibuster.
And this is the same Mitch McConnell that in 2016 refused the Garland nomination that Obama made, saying that the presidential election cycle had already commenced. Has Mitch McConnell commented on the hypocrisy of his shift?
It doesn't particularly bother him, right, or any of these Republicans. Look, this is raw, naked, brutal power at stake here, and the Republicans understand that. What happened, to give you another idea, what the Federalist Society agenda is all about, Judge Lawrence Walsh said that the Federalist Society wants to undo Franklin Delano Roosevelt's New Deal. That is, they want to bring the Supreme Court back to the bad old days of the Herbert Hoover Supreme Court that struck down the original FDR New Deal legislation. Judge Walsh was a pillar of the Republican Party. He said this. He worked for Governor Dewey there in New York, busting the mobs, Republican governor. He then was a deputy attorney general for President Eisenhower. He was a federal district court judge. He was a partner in the very prestigious New York firm, Davis Polk & Wardwell, and president of the American Bar Association. And he said that is their agenda, to go back before FDR's New Deal, and we'll be dealing with the Herbert Hoover Supreme Court. And now that we have Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, and it looks like Barrett, it's going to be the Trump Court, and that is their agenda, yes.
What are the chances of the nomination not going through at this point without the filibuster as an option?
That's really up to us. You see, we do have one precedent here, and that is Bork. When Bork was nominated for the Supreme Court, the standard practice would be the White House would offer the nominee PR handlers. We have to understand all these nomination proceedings, you know, are really not designed to search for truth or anything like that. These are all national media spectacles designed, and it's true for the Democrats, designed to sell the candidate to the American people on TV screens. So Bork, I guess, was so arrogant, he declined his PR handlers. And so he went out there in the testimony and was so radical in his positions that the American people rose up and demanded he be rejected. Now, it's not some great left-wing conspiracy against Bork. And that's why everyone after Bork has taken their PR handlers. So Alito, Roberts, Thomas, Barrett, Gorsuch, Kavanaugh are every bit as radical as Bork and Scalia, except they presented themselves in accordance with a Hollywood script. And then this is drilled into them before the hearings by so-called murder boards that the military uses for officer promotions. So this is highly scripted Hollywood style. But Bork didn't do it, and he was defeated. So that is the one chance I think we have here, that in the 2 days of hearings, Barrett has indicated how radical she really is by not answering just basic questions about, would you overrule Obergefell that ratified gay marriage? Would you recuse yourself from election cases because Trump is nominated you? No answer. What about, the whole list of these things, the Affordable Care Act? Of course she's going to rule against the Affordable Care Act. She bobbed and weaved on that question. What about Medicare? Well, again, the Federal Society, they want to get rid of the FDR New Deal and, of course, Lyndon Johnson's Great Society. All that is going to go. Everything we see, that would mean Social Security, too. So the one hope we have is that if you look at all the questions she refused to answer, is to say, this person is too radical for us. She should have answered these questions. They were slam dunk questions, no brainers, and she didn't answer them. And so to rise up and tell the Senate, like we did on Bork, we don't want her on the Supreme Court, and at least try to get the vote. She'll be voted out of committee. I have no doubt that's going to happen. But to get the vote in the full Senate postponed at least until after the election, that can be done. Both Collins and Murkowski have said they don't want to vote before the election. And so if we can get, so it's a very razor-thin majority there the Republicans have. So if we all rise up and bombard the members of the Republican members of the Senate, certainly, and say, we want all this at least postponed until after the elections. The elections are going to be a train wreck, okay? That's for sure. And so who knows what will happen after the elections. So that would be my advice, that you want to weigh in, at least with the Republican senators, the rest of them, and say no vote before the election. We have a chance of doing that.
And just on Amy Barrett and her stance that she's taken on issues, I understand that she also, as a judge on the U.S. Court of Appeals in the Seventh Circuit, upheld a segregated workplace.
She did, right. And, and of course, she's going to overturn Roe versus Wade. That's why she's being put on there. Trump made that clear. She's a devout Catholic. I'd say super devout Catholic. For super devout Catholics, abortion is a mortal sin. And you automatically excommunicate yourself if you get an abortion. That's not true for anything else there in the Catholic faith. So, of course, she's going to overturn Roe versus Wade.
Wow. So what people can do is call their U.S. senators, it sounds like, at this point.
Right. And you want to, at a minimum, get the vote postponed until after the election, and then we'll see where we stand.
Well, thanks.
I think that can be done. of course, I'm against the nomination, but you know, just trying to look at this politically, we need to get this past the election, and then at least she won't be up there to steal the election for Trump, which she's clearly going to do. And Trump admitted that's why he's putting her on there. And under standard Federalist Society doctrine, that's what she'll do. She'll decide whatever cases come up there in favor of Trump. As a matter of fact, Scalia boasted that he was the one behind orchestrating the 5-4 vote, getting the 4 votes necessary for the Supreme Court to take up Bush v. Gore, and then pushing it through. That was her boss.
You know, I do want to let you go, but I just want to ask about that specifically, because it was 20 years ago, and I'm sure that some of our listeners aren't even really aware of what happened in 2000 and how, or in, you know, the 1999-2000 election, how George Bush Jr. actually ended up becoming president.
Right. Well, Al Gore won the popular vote, but because of the problems down there in Florida, you know, the Florida electoral votes were up for grabs. And, you know, because of the hanging chads and all the rest, that was total chaos. So the lawyer for Bush Jr. At that time was Jim Baker, and he orchestrated filing with the U.S. Supreme Court to try to stop the vote in Florida. And in Bush, there was a recount going on, or recounting. Bush was somewhat ahead, but not by much. Scalia was able to get that case accepted by the U.S. Supreme Court. It should have never been accepted in the first place. It's a political question. There's a federal statute that, and the U.S. Constitution, that determines that any disputed election would be decided by the United States Congress, the House of Representatives. So they never should have taken that up in the first place, but Jim Baker and Scalia got it taken up, and then the five Republican justices shut down the vote in Florida with Bush Jr. ahead. And for whatever reason, I don't know why, Al Gore threw in the towel. It was ridiculous, but you know, that was his decision. And we could, you know, we could be in a similar situation here where Joe Biden just throws in the towel. I really don't know.
Well, a lot at stake in November and in these Amy Coney Barrett hearings that are going on right now in the U.S. Senate. I just want to thank you so much for joining us today. We've been speaking with Professor Francis Boyle, law professor at the University of Illinois. Thanks for joining us today, Professor Boyle.
Well, again, thank you for having me on, and please keep up all the good work.
Thanks again. This is Jenkins Rosenberg with KBOO Radio.